Okay, Bill, your video's all set.
Okay.
My video is crossed out. I know we had video this morning.
Yeah, and it shows up on screen as working too. So I'm not quite sure what the issue is. Do you have it? Yeah.
Let me see if there's any other option.
Your voice is coming through fine.
Yeah, I unmuted that this time, but I can't unmute. Let's see if I can. Nothing. Let me go out and come back in again.
Okay.
Because it's not acting. Okay.
I was going to suggest you may be doing what I do, and I have a little cover over my camera buttons. So
No.
Okay,
no,
that's the perfect wall you get. You see me.
I think my computer looks like it's frozen. There we go. Let me see where I can go.
Certainly can hear you.
Yeah. Let's see what happens.
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, how are you?
I did not change my name to Andrew Schiffer, by the way.
Yeah. We heard he got a promotion, but I didn't know the chief.
Yeah. Bob, I'm going to have to restart my computer. It'll take a couple of minutes because this is all seems to be locked up.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay.
You're here. Your video isn't on, but we can hear your voice.
Is that me, Bob, you can hear?
I can hear you, too.
Okay, I'm having trouble closing down. The whole thing is frozen, but it'll close down and we'll restart.
Hold on. Nope.
I've got a dialog box here that says, please click OK if you see the system dialog. I don't see that. If nothing prompts from the browser, download and run Zoom.
But we can hear you fine. Usually there's a little camera on the lower left-hand side. I'm going to step away for half a second. I got to locate somebody. Hey, are you in on a meeting? All right, go back in again.
Let's see. How much snow do you guys have up in North Camp?
We're closing in on 3 inches.
Okay.
Plowable.
Plowable, yeah. They've been by already. Town roads are pretty slick.
Yes, they are.
Hey, Chris, check your cell phone.
Check my cell phone?
For a text.
Okay, all right. We get it. It's getting to be. Okay, all right. I would say no initially. See
okay.
Where it goes. Yep. I haven't had a chance to digest it yet.
Me either. So I want to make sure.
All right. Okay, Bob, I can see you on the screen as Rich O.
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's all right. I won't ask where you got the computer. That's you. You're in. Okay.
I can't. It's amazing. I can't see anybody. I'm in this post attendee thing.
We are, we're missing
Gail.
Gail, who was in and now she's out. I think she's the only one, though.
Okay, I'm back. All right, good. Okay, I see. Yep.
Okay, let's give Gail. Give it a minute. And Gail was in, then she had to go re-log in again, so hopefully she'll be in shortly.
Okay.
There are a number of people, just so you know, joining by phone.
Okay. And I have, let's see, Chris, you're identified to me as Andrew Schiffer.
Yeah, it's on his laptop, but it's,
Yeah, okay. Okay, great. I see Warren. Okay.
So the.
Hey, Bob. Hi, Bob. Tim.
Hey.
Do you see me?
I sure do. I see you. I see Bruce. I see everybody. Who's this guy? Bill. Yeah.
We're all here.
We are all here. All right. See, so we're just. Oh, it's 4:00, isn't it?
Yeah. Why don't we give a minute to see if Gail can get in? Because she was in earlier, and then she had an issue with her computer, and now she's trying to get back in again.
Okay, sounds good.
And again, remember that you are live and that there are a number of people who are have the ability to listen in by phone.
Okay, good. Okay.
Bob?
Yes. Which?
Skinner?
Yep.
Should I be able to see everybody's face or just the person that's talking?
I've got it up, so you should be able to see everybody's face. If you look at the top, there should be a icon that's a bunch of squares on the right-hand corner. If you'll click that, you'll see that you'll see everybody's square. And then what'll happen is, as you the person speaks, that person will be highlighted.
And you feel free to listen in if you're still recording. You don't have to. All right, let me know.
All right, let me see if I can find Gail. No, I still don't see Gail.
Okay.
Oh, hold on. Looks like she may be here. There she is. Okay, Gail?
Hi, I'm on my phone right now. My laptop wasn't working. My husband played with my son with Zoom this afternoon, so I think that locked it up.
Okay. Bob, we've got everybody here.
Okay, well, let's start this special meeting of the Board of Selectmen on Monday, March 23rd at 4 p.m. We're meeting virtually, courtesy of Zoom, and we're all here with Bruce Lockwood, Bob Skinner, and and Chris Arciero, our police. We have public comment on our agenda. It's going to be a little difficult to get that at this point. So we're going to trust that questions or comments will be sent to us via email, email and phone. And considering that, I'd like to go ahead and talk about the emergency declaration that we issued last week on Thursday. Bob, you have that, right? That the text of that?
I do. Under our emergency operations plan, town officials have the ability to have an emergency declaration. We will usually do that if there's things that we have to do that because of the clear and present threat to life and property. We've done this a number of times. Usually it's related to snowstorms. This time it obviously is the COVID-19 event. But we declared you as first selectman, the chief executive officer, declared an emergency declaration. You authorized the emergency operations center to be open and initiated the emergency operations plan. The emergency operations center is in monitoring, so there's nobody actually staffing it right now. What we're doing is monitoring it, but we do have it set up so that if we have to use it, we would have the ability to go in and use it and staff it. We have all the computers in there, supplies and everything else that would be necessary to staff it. And so that's set up, and then pursuant to the town charter, within 120 hours of the first selectman declaring a state of emergency, we have to have a board of selectmen meeting to ratify that state of emergency. And so that's why we're meeting tonight, or one of the reasons that we're meeting tonight. I would also add that most of our surrounding towns have done the same. Granby, Simsbury, Avon, Suffield, and many, many other towns have done the same thing.
Thank you, and I want to really do a shout out to Bob, Bruce, and Chris for really being on top of this thing and guiding us through this this process. I think something that needs to be said is that not everyone in our community is taking this thing as seriously as they need to. We really do need to emphasize in every way possible that social distancing matters. It could be even a life and death situation for a number of our residents. We don't know who's carrying this virus. In a lot of cases, the symptoms do not appear while somebody is carrying it and could convey it to other people. So this strategy of social distancing means an awful lot, could mean life or death to some of our more vulnerable population. So, I mean, that said, what I'd like to do is call for a vote to ratify the emergency declaration, and then we can debate it if we wish, but do I hear a motion to do so?
Bob, I would make the motion to ratify the declaration of emergency.
And I'll second it.
Thank
Tim.
You. Is there any question, any debate, any discussion?
Yeah, I have several questions. The way I'm reading the town charter is that we're not actually ratifying the state of emergency that's in existence. We're now gonna, it sounds like what I is that we're extending it beyond 120 hours, because that's what the purpose of this meeting is. It's not to ratify the existing action, but to extend the leave. I'm looking at section 503 of the, and
So anyways, the idea is that because the first selectman is empowered to declare a state of emergency for a period not to exceed 120 hours, skip down a little bit, is that after the state of emergency has been declared, she'll convene a meeting of the Board of Selectmen, and if warranted to ratify.
It says ratify.
Warranted ratify. Excuse me? Okay, so we're ratifying.
It says ratify and extend. I guess I took as if you're going to ratify it, you're extending it. But if you want to change the motion to say ratify and extend, you could do that.
When we get to that point, and the idea is that if we're going to extend it, we're going to extend it for some kind of time period that we're going to put in there. That would be the way you would do it. I don't think. I'm not sure we would just leave it open-ended. I think that there would be a period of time we extend it for.
Well, we do, we have a motion on the floor to ratify.
Correct.
At this point, I would be hard-pressed to know when, how long this period of emergency is going to last. I mean, I would love to say that it would be over tomorrow. Or even in 2 weeks, but I think we all have a pretty firm idea that it's going to take longer than that. But is it going to be over in June? Is it going to be
right.
over July? I don't know.
Okay.
Would we be obligated to revisit this thing and reinstate an emergency declaration?
If you want to give it a 60 or 90 day period or 45 day period, you can do that. Just make sure you meet to extend it if it's required in advance.
That's
I think I'd go 60 days.
I would modify my motion to extend it for 60 days at this point.
Because the charter does say that any resolutions that we adopt during this time period unless they're continued by a town meeting action, shall automatically cease to have effect after 60 days after enactment. So 60 days seems to be a precedented period of time.
This is Tim. I'll amend my second to align with Bill's motion to extend.
Okay, thank you. I think we may have to look. I'm going to recommend that we vote in favor of this, but I think we should look into some of the 10 declarations, the executive orders issued by the governor, to see if the requirement of a town meeting to ratify this thing after 60 days is still in place. A number of the procedures have been modified by executive orders, thinking of 7G and 7H, which have had some impact on meetings and on the budget process. So we'll look. I would say recommend that we approve this now and then look into where we go, what our next steps would be. Should we need to go beyond the 60 days? Hopefully we don't.
But I do have some more questions along that before I'm ready to vote.
Okay.
All right. So I noticed that basically one of the effects of the emergency declaration is to open up our emergency operations center, but our emergency operations center is unmanned and it's just in a monitoring mode from what I think I understood was being said. So I've got a question: how big an emergency we actually have if our emergency operations and how the town is responding to it. I understand how the state can be in an emergency situation, but the town declaring a local emergency, but we're not the emergency operations center, as far as I can tell, is not doing anything. So are we really in an emergency situation locally?
I would say the second item on this agenda, actually the third item on this agenda, Warren, is a report of the actions taken thus far and that are underway on the part of our emergency management team, which are extensive. I believe you got an email from that was passed along to you from the chief.
Right. Yep. I saw that.
Talking about that, what I would recommend is that just advise you that that actions have been taken. A number of actions have been taken. We've closed town hall. We have ceased. We've ceased traffic. We are meeting not in person. We're doing this. I would say we've done quite a bit. We've closed schools. I would say we're doing quite
right. But aren't we? Yeah, I agree. We're doing it quite a bit. But it looks like to me we're doing that all under the state declaration.
I think I would like to point this out, that the time to get approval to open up the operations center is not when you need it to be open, but in advance of that. We could anticipate a time where, because our ambulance is going out, because we're low on equipment, because we have seniors who don't have the access to food, that we may need to organize and mobilize, and that's essentially what the Emergency Operations Center is for. And to try to convene a Board of Selectmen meeting in advance of that and get approval to open it up just doesn't seem like it would put us in a good position to be able to respond to the events that may occur. So that's one reason why we have it in monitoring now, so that when we need it, we'd have the ability to open it. We do foresee that there could be a situation where we'd want to actively be participating in the operations center.
What I see when I see this is that I think this is a premature action on the town's part, that we don't need to do it now. We didn't need to do it now, but the things that we can do is all covered by the state, and it seems like we're taking action before we need to take them, before we need to take it, and I don't know that we're getting any benefit out of it, so that when we need to take it, it's not available. We can't escalate it. We're escalating too soon, I believe.
Bob, can I speak?
Please.
So the process related to an emergency declaration is also part of making you eligible for funding that's available as the public assistance documentation becomes available related to this funding stream that's coming from the federal government. The availability of those funds is usually tied from the timing of the declaration you've made. So anything we've done related to additional costs for supplies, any additional manpower hours that we may incur would all be eligible once the declaration is declared at the local level. The state declaration is not our declaration. And then I would also tell you that all around the nation, including the state, most EOCs are running in a virtual standpoint, just like you guys are running your meeting right now. So we have been having conversations about the resources we need and et cetera. I don't know that I wouldn't say that the EOC, even though it's in a monitoring standpoint, that the collaboration that normally takes place in the EOC is being done virtually at this point. But that's clearly up to you all to interpret.
I would corroborate that what Bruce has said. The FEMA declaration, FEMA has come out, and I think we've gotten the communication from the state that it's time to keep track of expenses related to COVID-19 so that we can be reimbursed by FEMA. And again, this ties back to declaring an emergency.
Tim here.
Yeah.
When we opened the Emergency Operations Center, even if it's not staffed, do we have to add extra personnel, or do we just divert personnel who are already working for the town to staff the EOC? And if that's true, then I don't see where opening the EOC is going to have any downside at all, and I would be in favor of doing it.
There's no diversion of staff until such time as we actively staff the EOC, and then at that point it would include both staff and volunteers and CERT and the other partners that we have to meet this crisis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Warren, do you have further questions?
I do, but I think I need to hold it for a little bit later on. And it has to do with what process we expect we may need to do to pass the budget. Because that requires a referendum. And but I'm not sure when and where to ask that question, because it's not really immediately pertaining to this motion.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor. Any further comments? Hearing none, I will call the question.
So the biggest benefit, if I understand this, is that it does make us eligible for some reimbursement funding. It does have the Emergency Operations Center, I guess, open so that we don't have to take further action to do that. Would it be up to the Chief Administrative Officer and the First Selectman to escalate the level in the Emergency Operations Center now that it's open? I haven't had a chance to read the plan. I apologize. I didn't look at that, so I'm not sure what our situation is on that.
I believe the Chief of Police is Tim, you want to speak?
No.
I believe the Chief of Police is in charge of that Emergency Management Center.
Chris Arcaro, the Chief of Police, is the Emergency Management Director. The emergency management director would probably request of the First Selectman that it be elevated, and at that time it would be elevated.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. All in favor of the motion to ratify the emergency declaration and extend it for 60 days, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Tim says aye.
Okay. Gail?
She's muted, it looks like.
Gail, you're muted.
Bob, there you are.
Gail,
okay,
you
I'm
are.
Unmuted again. I'm unmuted again, thank you. I say aye.
Okay. Warren, did you say aye?
Yes.
I did. Okay, so it's unanimous. Okay, great. Let's move on to the next item in the agenda, which is a report of actions taken to date. I believe Bob sent out, as a matter of fact, I know that Bob sent out a report by Chris on the actions taken by the Canton Police Department. But I'm going to leave it to Bob. Bob, to give us a report of what we've been doing so far.
Sure. Chris, are you available? Yeah, we seem to not have Chris. All right, Bruce, can you give a rundown of where EMS is?
Chris is back on. He just needs to be unmuted.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Okay, Chris, are you there?
Yep. Okay, so could you repeat the question, Bob?
Yes, Chris, what has the police department done in order to prepare for this pandemic and also as the emergency management director?
Sure, so I think you've gotten a copy of the two-page document that I provided to you and the rest of the Board of Selectmen, so I can go through each and every point, but I can assure you that there's been constant communication between myself, you, Bob Bessel, Bruce Lockwood, all the state partners, Farmington Valley Health District, the CDC guidelines. We sort of coalesced all that information, put it in this memo, and I think that we've got a great operation going forward, and we are, you know, performing the essential duties of an EOC if we were all present, just doing a little bit of social distancing in mind. The bottom line is we've outfitted all the police officers with the proper protective equipment to ensure their safety. Again, they're the frontline first responders to just about any incident in this town. Worked great with Bruce and his staff to ensure that we have enough equipment moving forward and that we have protocols in place and how we're going to address each and every call that we respond to, whether it be a routine call or a 911 call. You've certainly taken steps inside this building to sort of harden the the infrastructure, if you will, to ensure that we're maintaining our social distancing even within this building. We've limited a lot of the meetings, a lot of the processes that we go through, you know, as far as proactive patrolling and even arrest and court processes. We made those adjustments based on this COVID-19 concern and protocol that's been put out by the federal government and the state government. We've got a pretty good list of our inventory of the equipment. You know, I update that every Thursday to you, Bob. We've talked to all the state partners, put orders in, and we'll work forward to try to get that equipment resupplied when necessary.
Great.
Bruce, can you give a recap of where EMS is?
I can. So we've been working the situation for about the last 2.5 weeks, doing inventories. We had already placed an order for some of this material before we really got into COVID-19. We are anxiously awaiting to see where we are on the list, because we were originally given a short window of delivery. Now, with everything going on, even though we placed our order, we're in the pool with everybody else as to how quick stuff comes in. We've done a quick estimate based on the different levels of PPE we currently need to wear. And we believe we have about 200 calls that we can do. Now, 200 calls for us would, take a while normally. Based on the data we're seeing from other countries and et cetera, and the timelines, we would expect to start seeing respiratory issue calls sometime in the next 7 days. And there are places where they went through 6 months worth of materials in 6 days. So we're working with DPH, who is our licensing agent for OEMS, UConn Health Center, related to our sponsor hospitalship, and making sure that we are wearing the appropriate PPE for the appropriate level of care. You will see that as of this Wednesday, gave operational direct orders that everyone is to be in a level of PPE based on the type of call we're going to. We are reserving the N95 masks for high-risk procedures such as intubation, bag valving, nebulizer treatments that will aerosol, because this is a large droplet disease. We don't necessarily need to be in an N95. We've been working closely with Chris and his staff to make sure that we're all clear on the levels of PPE that we will wear. We're limiting exposure to the staff that actually are doing the interviews. When possible, we're having the individuals come to the door, or come outside and speak to us. If we need to go inside, we're having our staff, limited one individual in PPE, make entry and begin the initial assessment, make a determination as to what we need to do. I will tell you that over the last 2 weeks, almost on a daily basis, we make minor adjustments or adjustments based on new information coming in, cases that we've seen. We did have two potential cases earlier this week. Both of those cases tested negative, thankfully for us, but we are continuing to monitor. You will also see in my write-up that depending on the nature of the call when it comes in, we're having a command officer respond with the ambulance, and that's mainly to make sure that we ensure PPE, making sure we reduce the footprint if necessary. We have suspended all observer time riding. We've also suspended the cadet program. Our policy says they can't be put into a high-risk situation, and I don't think that there's any incident I could put them into right now that's more high-risk. So we've made a decision that while they are members and they can continue to do stuff online with us, and ongoing. We've made it so our stations are closed to the public. You should see signs, big stop signs at the edges of our driveway. It tells you to dial 911, we will come to you. In addition, we've canceled all internal training and all internal socialization inside the fire department. Personnel are only to be at the building for an active call or clearance with their captain, so that we're not all there at one time. Someone can come down and do a mission readiness check on the truck to make sure equipment is still set, the truck still start, et cetera, which we need to do over the course of this time. We believe that we are just in the beginning of a marathon. I anticipate a spike in calls in the near future. We've been working with every Sunday night, we do an EMS regional call. We're now talking about how we uptick for additional calls, whether it's additional staffing, put our ambulances on the road, the second one. But in areas where we might see a reduction in staff due to illness, we're going to look at potentially sharing staff to staff a second ambulance. So it might be a Canton EMT and a Burlington EMT and a Canton ambulance. But we're going to work to make sure that we're able to deliver services as expected. We do anticipate changes in protocol coming from the state in the next week related to how we handle individuals who don't necessarily need to go to the hospital. Currently, the regulations require we are not allowed to refuse transport, but we do anticipate that the new regulation updates coming out with protocol will allow some assessment related to whether we actually transport a patient if they don't necessarily need to be transported. And that's going to be a fine line we have to look at as we go forward. I do anticipate that we will be making changes on a daily basis as we go forward. And we look forward to continue to serve the public and for your continued support. Thanks.
I want to just say thank you to Chris and Bruce for the work that you're putting into this. And quite frankly, I'm very pleased that we've activated this early so that the refinements in these processes, are being put into place now, well before the expected flood hits. I'd much rather sort of shake things out ahead of time than have to be dealing with procedural changes in the midst of everything else that's going on. One question I have is on resupply of masks and masks, gowns. Looks like gloves are in good supply. I know that there are some volunteers in town that are looking to actually construct some kind of face mask, not an N95, I don't think. And I think I've corresponded with Bob and Chris about that. If there are those, I guess they can go to the police department. Is that correct?
That's fine. We can store them here.
Okay.
Yeah, so I might add, all emergency equipment that we get, whether it be from businesses that have donated them, and there have been businesses that have donated them, or from the schools, that is being stored by the emergency management director and then dispersed by the emergency management director. So they end up going to the places that have the highest priority, not just the first person that asks. And we will be, doing that throughout this pandemic.
So just for clarification, we have already engaged someone to use a surgical material to create a shield that will go over our N95 masks that will allow us to extend the life of the mask. We've had a bunch of people reach out to us about these homemade masks that they're making. Unfortunately, OSHA, for the things like the high-risk cases and et cetera, are pretty clear about the level of mask we have to wear. It's an N95, and there's no certification for a homemade mask. So it's one of the reasons that we're being very mindful of the supplies we do have. And what we have in storage right now and what Chris is now securing at the police station will allow us to make sure that the OSHA level masks we're required to have personnel in are available. We have also looked at the fact that we're fortunate we're a fire department. If for some reason we were to start to run out of the N95 masks, we're in the middle of something we wouldn't normally do, but all of our EMS personnel are being fit tested for our SCBA. So they would be on self-contained breathing apparatus. The problem with that is it would become extremely difficult for them to provide patient care while inside of an enclosed mask. So it's not where we want to go, but we're trying to make that as a backup contingency plan. But we would end up going to the SCBA for those high-risk calls before we would go to the handmade mask. But I think that handmade masks may have benefits for other things that are available in town. So,
great.
Couple questions?
Yes.
Bruce, you were using some acronyms there that I wasn't completely familiar with.
Okay.
DB, PPE, I think, is one of them, and that I think is the all the protective equipment that someone would wear. I'd like for you to tell me what else that includes besides the mask. And I'd also like to ask you to tell me, you were talking about putting the homemade masks over top of the N95 or whatever it's called, and I wonder if that is a benefit or not.
So there are a couple of things. PPE is simply the terminology, personal protective equipment. It could be turnout gear, it could be whatever. For the specifics around this, depending on the level, it includes for high-risk patients that we might be doing those high-risk procedures, it would include a plastic face shield, the N95 mask, a paper suit, the infection control suits, depending on the level of protection we need. Everything includes latex or rubber, not latex, but a propylene glove now. We now require everybody to have gloves and masks on going into the calls.
So the gown is paper, but it must be treated so that it's more protective than simply some paper.
I can't tell you what it's made of. They're primarily paper over, it's a paper cloth combination, but it's a disposable outfit. So that is the one thing that once we use that disposable outfit, that's not something that we can continue to reuse because of the, they're pretty fragile. They do work for one call, but they're not something that we continue to cycle through. So we do have those, but we aren't necessarily required to wear those right now. We have them in storage, not in storage, on the trucks in storage. But if we have a high-risk call, our crews have already been advised that they will wear those. And you had another question. I can't remember what it was. I'm sorry.
Well, I've got another question that's going to get in front of the one that I asked before. There's gowns or whatever made out of paper. On the memo that I'm looking at, I don't see where it lists how many of those we have.
We weren't required to provide that information to the state. We currently have enough of those in stock. Probably to get us through 50 calls. But those aren't the same as the masks. The number of masks we need are for every call in the process. We believe we have a very limited number of times that we will currently have to wear those gowns.
Okay. And so what's your anticipation about adding to the backlog, storage of masks, the N95 and the regular type, 2 to 3 weeks, it says here. What's your anticipation that we could ramp up the number that we have so that we could get to the point where we have 6 weeks worth?
So I'm not doing time frames, right? I'm doing calls. And what I mean by that is, I know what we do for calls right now, but if we hit like 10 or 15 calls a day, and that's five pieces of equipment on every call that we're going to utilize, we're going to have a much faster burn rate. So I'm trying not to think weeks. I'm trying to think how many responses can we do? And currently I have enough supplies in stock to do everyday calls plus what we're doing for about 200 calls right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think part of this, Tim, is that we don't know. I mean, there, a lot of publicity has come up around supplies, this personal protective equipment, and a number of donors, a number of corporations have stood up and said, we're going to donate, we're going to manufacture. The state and the feds have said we're asking people to donate and manufacture. So I assume that these masks, this equipment will be manufactured and distributed. But of course, we don't know exactly how much time it's going to take for the materials the equipment that we need to get to the places where it's needed. I mean, obviously it's going to go to high need places first. Canton is not like New York City or New Orleans at this point, but at a certain point we should be getting these.
Right.
To clarify, I'm not in a panic mode at the moment. I know what we have. I'm looking at what we have for a call volume. If we start to see a significant uptick, then we may have a problem. But again, I believe that we have a contingency plan in place that most ambulance services don't. So I'm not panicked, but I do believe that in the near future, we are hopeful that we will start seeing some of our restock.
And do you have the opportunity to, Bruce, do you have the opportunity to order, front load the order to try to maintain the cushion as best you can? Or do you have to demonstrate some need before you can order more?
Well, our current order was just based on our request. So the other thing is, I think there'll be a shift here, and Chris will probably agree with this. At some point, if there's a release of some of the stuff from the national stockpile, our request can go through the state, not through our normal vendor. And if that's the case, then it will probably be based on what they believe is our call volume. And if that's the case, I don't think we would ever see what Hartford gets, but I believe that we would see some supply replenishment through there. So I think that in the near future, we have a couple of different paths that we can go. We are still trying to work through our normal vendor just because it's a path that we're used to. And it's not that I don't want to use the state stuff, but if I can get the stuff through my vendor, it may be faster and more efficient for us to get it in.
All right. Going back to the acronym stuff, I did have one question on Chris's report. There was something called PTA.
Sure. That's the promise to appear. So again, part of the whole mission with the proactive policing, that we'll probably tap the brakes on the proactive policing, and to the extent that we can make arrests and release people to appear in court as opposed to in custody arrest. That's just working with the state's attorney's office and the court system, not to overload the system at this time. So the officers do have that discretion. Obviously, with the serious crimes, domestic violence crimes, it's getting more close to how we normally practice that. But we do have some leverage and some ability to employ our level of discretion in that case.
Great. All right. Thank you. Further questions? Bob, do you have anything further to add?
Just as you know, Town Hall is closed a couple weeks ago, at least 2-3 weeks ago. We started ramping up, anticipating that we may have to work remote. We have issued a number of laptops and the ability for most town employees to work remote. Currently, employees are still responsible for performing their duties. If they're not here, they have the ability to work remote and respond to both phone calls and email and are directed to do so. They also have been divided up into groups in order to respond to certain issues. Those include first responders who would oversee the medical calls, monitor security of closed businesses, monitor compliance with governor's executive orders, oversee procurement and distribution of safety equipment, coordinate the use of CERT, that's the Community Emergency Response Team, and coordinate resources for the Emergency Operations Center. The second is Citizen Services. This group provides services to those who cannot get them because of they're over a certain age or have a certain health issue that would prevent them from leaving the home. That includes providing food, trash removal, and such other services. They also would recruit and coordinate the use of volunteers. We have a number of people who are calling up looking to volunteer. They would collect and disseminate and administer, to the extent possible, local, state, and federal assistance programs. We know there's a number of programs that are out there, and we're organizing staff to assist in the administration of those programs. And also provide other services. The library, again, is working to provide resources to the public, both online and possibly even at some point books. And Park and Rec have had activities out there that people can do online and suggestions for exercises and other things. There's a communication group. They're responsible for coordinating the public message on the town website, Q-Notify, and social media. They will receive coordinating messages between the other groups, so that they will assist the first responders and citizen services and get the message out. They also will prioritize local messages, both COVID-19 messages, but also personal interest stories, and making sure that people know exactly what's going on, even at the local level. And then we have a finance group that is making sure that payroll and AP continue to run. It's important that we do what's necessary to support those people who are you know, still out there and working, as all town staff is. Also track benefit and regulatory changes for town employees and others. The amount of legislation that's coming out now and regulatory change is significant, and we need to track all those changes. Then finally, we have a business community group, and their responsibility is to support the businesses. Obviously, this crisis is going to have a significant impact on local businesses. You know, restaurants have had to pare back or close. A lot of our shops are small shops, and they're the type that would be significantly impacted by this. And so they're going to be working to get the word out as to what shops are still open, what restaurants are still open, and then, you know, identify what assistance is out there, either through the state or federal government or any local assistance we could give. They're going to work with the Chamber of Commerce and the EDA to do this. Make sure inspections continue. There are still construction projects that are out there and going forward under the governor's exclusions. And we want to make sure that those construction projects are able to continue and that we have the inspection services available for them. And then also, once this gets over, there's going to need to be, there'll be a pent-up demand, hopefully, of additional projects. And we want to make sure that we have the ability to meet those. So we have a group that will be working with those five sectors to help smooth out this crisis and basically act as a kind of a force multiplier to work with the volunteers and the other in the community to make sure that we meet the needs of this crisis. So that's where Town Hall stands, and we intend to keep business going and serve the public.
My question is, are you comfortable right now that we're in a position to provide the necessary support for our citizens, particularly our seniors or our at-risk population?
Yeah, we've been working with community renewal team and other entities to make sure that we can get lunches out, or I should say meals out to them. We had a grab and go last Friday, and I think we're going to move away from that and actually start delivering them to the households by using a dial-a-ride van. And plus volunteers, I know social services, along with that committee I just suggested, are working with the volunteers to make sure that gets done. And I think we'll meet the demands. I mean, the one thing I would say, if anybody's listening, the important thing is call us, let us know. We have volunteers that are willing to help. We have systems in place, and we want to help you. And so even as far as, you know, getting the trash to the transfer station, we're making arrangements for that too. So if you've been advised not to leave the house, give us a call, and we want to help you. So.
Somebody wants to help.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
That's okay. That's entirely okay. Yeah. I got to say, I've fielded a number of phone calls and emails from citizens who want to help. So there's a tremendous community outpouring here. I think it's really important that this all be coordinated so that we're not asking people to do things that don't need to be done, and that people feel like if they do something that it matters. There's nothing worse than having somebody who wants to do something feel like they were, you know, like it didn't really matter, it didn't really count, because we all know it does. Just very quickly, I've been on a number of phone calls, as Bob has, with the governor, with the Farmington Valley Health District, with local leaders, and everybody's doing a great deal. I had a phone call with Luke Bronin. He had a group of municipal leaders in Hartford County. They were looking to do some kind of a letter to the governor to say, or press conference to say, here's what needs to be done over and above what the governor the governor has done already, and I took it upon myself to say, number one, I wouldn't say anything without your approval, and number two, I didn't see that all that much more that we could demand of the governor that he hasn't been doing. He's been pushing pretty hard here. So on that count, I just said thanks, but no thanks for that.
Bob, I've got a question.
Sure.
With regard to our EOC and the fact that this is an ongoing and in developing crisis as we move along, in the event that we in Canton feel that we need to do things that would contradict the restrictions that the governor has put on, I have no idea how that might play out or what they might be, but is there a process for us to make a demonstration that we have a need here that we want to put into effect that would go against something that the governor has put in place, and how would that play out?
I think it would be pretty, it'd be kind of difficult to do it. We'd have to do it on a case-by-case basis. And the governor, the way the governor's put these things out, such as, you know, social distancing requirements, people, you know, non-essential business requirements, that kind of thing, he's been very explicit about saying, we're not going to go out and arrest people, we're going to warn them. Now, of course, you know, what's a warning today may become an arrest in a week's time. I think we would really have to look at what that thing is that we so need to do that we would need to appeal or appeal, you know, for some kind of clemency from the state.
The only thing that I could think of along that line is that if we, in a more rural area, we may consider some businesses essential that the urban area may not consider essential. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I know that we would rely on a different set of services
I've looked at the list, not in great depth, but I've looked through all of it, and it seems pretty comprehensive, you know, as in terms of essential services. I mean, I think it pretty well covers the rural as well as the urban and suburban functions. These things are pretty well crafted. Obviously, they're not perfect. No, nobody is.
Right.
There's an exemption. The website allows you to submit a request to add something to the essential services list, even on a local basis. It's right at the bottom of the state's website to put a request in for a business, even locally.
Okay. So that would be just an example that I was thinking of off the top of my head, and where we might, I don't want to say challenge, but need assistance from the state.
So I guess the answer to my question is that there is some flexibility in the plan, and that's all I was wondering about, since, you know, we're in obviously uncharted waters. I'd like to know that if something came up, we wouldn't have to wait for approval in a situation that was time sensitive. There might be some opportunity to exhibit some flexibility so that we could get something done that we felt we needed to do.
We'll be flexible for whatever needs to happen.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we're practical.
And actually, the governor has been good about reaching out to municipalities and asking them what our needs are, what deadlines we need extended, and they've been very good about communicating with us about that. And I think of follow through what most people have asked for. So I give them credits for that.
Yeah, I've been very pleased with the governor's actions to date, and as I talk with other leaders, I'm finding the same reaction.
Sure. Well, I didn't want to suggest, and I have no reason to believe that this is anything less than a whole team effort. And I just wondered if how rigid those guidelines were. I know that the governor said they're guidelines, not requirements, and you know, I just wanted to know and hear it from somebody that there's some room to maneuver if the strange case comes up where we need to. So thank you for that.
Bob, if there's no other questions for me, I have to get off for a 5 o'clock call. Is that okay?
That's fine. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bob, if I could just say one thing, Bob.
Yeah, so Chris, go ahead.
About that whole issue with the non-essential, as we all know, that goes into effect at 8 o'clock this evening. The governor does have another telephone conference for EMDs and selectmen and CAOs in about 6 minutes, so we should probably get some finer details with respect to the order that's going to go into effect at 8 o'clock tonight. So I'm going to be checking out at 5 just to go into the governor's telephone conference in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I'd like to do the same, Mike, but so...
Okay, thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you all for your support.
Hold on. This is a meeting. We do need to adjourn.
Well, hey, wait a minute. At some point, you know, we've extended our emergency for 60 days, which goes past the 14th of May, which is the 2nd of May, which is when our budget referendum is required. So that's by the charter, so I'm not sure what we're going to do, how we're going to handle it. I understand, and I didn't hear it directly, so I'm passing on rumor at this point, that the governor has said he's waiving all of the requirements for town meetings for budget passing. I don't know if that's true or not, but we need to be thinking. Obviously, we don't need to solve it on this phone call so you can leave, but we do need to look at what our budget process is, because it is called out in the charter what our timelines are.
All right, Bob, if I could address that?
Please.
That is correct. The governor has said that essentially it authorizes in towns with a Board of Selectmen that the Board of Selectmen can authorize the budget-making entity, which would be the Board of Finance, to adopt the budget and set the mill rate. And so it'll be up to the Board of Selectmen to make that decision. I would, proposal would be to put that on the agenda for the next meeting. We would look to have a special Board of Selectmen meeting next Wednesday. So this is how the procedures would go. On Monday, there would be a Board of Finance meeting. And at that Board of Finance meeting, it's anticipated they would make modifications to the budgets that had been presented to them. And then the next responsibility is for the Board of Selectmen and Board of Education to address those modifications and what impact they would have on our budgets. We could do that next Wednesday at the special Board of Selectmen meeting and also address any routine matters that we have, and there will be some. And then thereafter, we would send our changes back to the Board of Finance, and the Board of Finance would review those. But so next Wednesday, I think we would look at both that whole process and authorizing the Board of Finance or not authorizing the Board of Finance to adopt the budget, and then also address any changes that the Board of Finance makes to the budget.
Yeah. Are both of those meetings for 7 o'clock, Bob Skinner?
Yeah, they haven't been set yet. The Board of Finance, I talked to the chair of the Board of Finance this afternoon. That one would be at 7 o'clock. And I would suggest ours be at 7 o'clock, too. That's when people are used to meeting.
Yeah. And that would be on the 25th or the 31st?
It would be whatever next Wednesday is.
Next Wednesday
I think it's April 1st. April 1st.
Perfect day for it.
April Fool's. This is our budget. What a joke.
Warren, if you're interested, take a look at Governor's Order 7I.
7I.
And Item number 13, the item is suspension of in-person budget adoption requirements for municipalities.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn if we're ready for that.
I will make a motion to adjourn.
I second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. Take care.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you for all your work.